Hello and welcome to Additive Insight, the original additive manufacturing podcast and your source for news, interviews and comments on the latest 3D printing and additive manufacturing intelligence, brought to you by TCT Magazine. I'm your host, Sam Davis, and today I'm joined by Slice Engineering CEO, Dan Baruz. Throughout our conversation, Dan explains the challenges Slice Engineering is addressing through its delivery of extrusion 3D printing consumables, the capabilities of its product portfolio, and the impact he expects AI to have in 3D printing. We also discuss the adoption of desktop 3D printing solution in the defense space, and what we can expect from Slice Engineering moving forward. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more additive insight, head on over to tctmagazine.com, where you can subscribe to the print edition of TCT Magazine and our weekly Additive Insight newsletter for free. Dan, welcome to the Additive Insight podcast. We're going to talk a lot today about AI and 3D printing and the impact the convergence of those technologies will have for designers and manufacturers. But first, I wanted to get a bit more of an understanding about your background and I guess how Slice Engineering as a business came about. So can you tell us that story before we get into the rest?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Sam. I'm really excited to be on the podcast. As I mentioned, when you first got on, I've been reading your articles for years, so it's cool to chat with you virtually at least. Yeah, so Slice's story, my background's in medical device manufacturing, so it was my co-founders, and we kind of stole a little bit of a team from our med background and brought it over into the additive space. Essentially, the concept we were facing back in 2016, it was very difficult to print PEEK, especially in a desktop format. That's still the case, actually, in most situations. So my co-founder, Chris Montgomery, came up with an idea that would allow us to print higher temperatures on a desktop machine. So unbeknownst to us at the time, we couldn't. There's other factors that play into achieving the mechanical properties you need for PEEK parts to function the way that they should, like chamber temperature and such. But we didn't know that at the time. And so essentially we came up with a printhead solution, a hot end that had a bunch of other features, but one of them was it could print higher temperature materials and it was easier to change nozzles. And so it allowed you to, on a single machine, have a better user experience from printing high resolution parts to printing something maybe like a fast prototype. So that kind of launched us into starting a business. We incorporated in 2017. Released product in 2018. And so we're basically 7 years into this journey, actually, as of a couple of days ago. So been a fun ride, definitely been a roller coaster. You know, the additive market is not, it's a sort of a nascent and early stage market. So it's always got its ups and downs. But that's essentially our story. We make now print heads for everything from folks that are doing really high resolution implantable medical devices down to, you know, we have $50 upgrades on our Amazon store for people that are using their Ender 3s. Right. So pretty much anybody that wants to improve their performance on their machine, we've probably got a solution as long as it's in the kind of the FDM, FFF or material extrusion, polymer material extrusion space.
Yeah. In terms of that, I guess that mission to enable the printing of higher temp materials like PEEK on, you know, extrusion machines. How much progress would you say you've made in those 7 years since you incorporated the company? You know, I guess how much progress have you made and what additional progress is there still to be made in terms of enabling some of these more higher performance materials to be used for 3D printing?
Yeah, great question. So I'd say we've achieved the basic tenet of what we were trying to do a few years ago, and that was create mechanically sound structures with printed PEEK, FDM printed PEEK. And there are parts now being used, PEI specifically for aerospace applications, because it's a cleared polymer by the U.S. Air Force. And then for medical applications, PEEK, absolutely. So Curativa was a company that made the news a lot last year with their implantable medical devices that have been cleared by the FDA. They use our printheads. Mm-hmm. So that milestone has been hit.
Yeah.
And in terms of next generation, speed has always been a limitation of 3D printing. And so speed is a major hurdle. The higher temperature of the polymer, the more difficult it is to print it fast, right, reliably. And so that's really kind of the future, where we see high temperature polymers going is trying to get them to go faster. Right. Let's print at similar speeds as to what you can do with a lower temperature polymer.
Okay. And in terms of the product portfolio then, talk to me about, I guess, what you have today that's available for your customer base, and what the kind of roadmap is to tackle some of those challenges, those next generation challenges in terms of getting speed and reliability and this advanced material offering as well. How are you guys going to shape that product portfolio moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, existing solutions, obviously, in our portfolio. As I mentioned, we're working with companies like Curativa. And longer term, that's where we see a lot of opportunity, is working specifically with 3D printer manufacturers or companies that have a particular application in mind. Maybe they have an aerospace application or a medical application or dental, and they want to achieve a particular thing, and maybe their printhead currently is not capable of doing that. If you look at, traditional manufacturing processes like CNC, there is an expectation for thousands of hours of reliability before, in terms of machine time, before you see a failure on the tool, on the tool head, the equivalent of what we would have for a print head in additive. And outside of our offerings, we don't really see that in the market, where there's an opportunity to have thousands of hours of print time without a failure. And so that's kind of where we're going. We're helping companies improve reliability on definitely application specific needs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we see the future, and that's really where we're headed as a company, is helping other companies achieve, help their customers, right? So we're I always tell the team we're like Yoda, we're not Luke Skywalker in the original trilogy. We're trying to help our customers along the journey.
And in terms of the slice engineering journey, as you've said, you incorporated the company in 2017, first product in 2018, and I came into the industry around the same time, really, end of 2016. Mm. And I was very aware from the beginning that, we were maybe 3 or 4 years since maybe the peak of the hype around 3D printing. So I was wondering, as a company that's come into the industry and has, set up a business that, will work with a load of manufacturers of desktop FFF machines and users of desktop FFF machines, what your kind of experience was of that post-hype era. How did that affect a company like you coming to market, and how has it been for the company since then, in those years after? Obviously you would have missed the major hype cycle.
Yeah.
But I feel like there was still some kind of hangover from that, potentially. Yeah. So talk to me about that. And obviously this will help us inform what we're coming to talk about in terms of AI as well, because obviously where that technology is at the moment, there's a lot of hype around that. So how was that for the company in those first few years, kind of establishing itself, working with that user base, working with those technology suppliers that had experienced that?
Yeah. So I guess one note I'll say is we don't just work with desktop market. We work with industrial machines as well. So we're kind of across multiple segments of the market, which is helpful. And that goes back to the hype you mentioned, right? So what we've seen is there was, you know, maybe 2013, 2014, everybody was saying by 2016, everybody will have a 3D printer in their house, you know, and obviously that didn't quite pan out. But if you're familiar with, gosh, now I'm blanking on the cycle, but there's a term for the hype cycle.
The Gartner hype cycle.
Yes. The Gartner hype cycle. Yeah. So the Gartner hype cycle, right? We've got this big, hype and then sort of reality hits and there's a drop off. And then as, some researchers would say, sort of the real work begins is after the hype drops off, because all the engineers and scientists are getting busy because they got excited. They maybe got into it because of the hype,
yeah.
But then the real work starts of, okay, how do we actually develop the backend systems, the user experience, the, you know, the intersection of software, materials, and hardware to work synchronously in such a way that that everything actually functions how it's supposed to, and you get a repeatable, reliable process out the back end. And I think there's also a hype around 3D printing as a technology without a realization of what exactly it was going to be used for potentially. You see this with like laser technology, right? When the laser was introduced, everybody was talking about lasers for a while. Oh, it's so cool. We can, you know, direct a beam of light. It is really cool. But there were no applications when the laser was invented. It was just, we have this cool technology now. What do we do with it? Well, then pretty soon it was, you know, reading CDs and in your car and in your Walkman. And then it was, you know, now it's being used for your self-driving vehicle. Like lasers are everywhere now, but it took a while for, I mean, decades for those applications to develop and for the laser technology to get better. I mean, heck, now we're using lasers for 3D printing, obviously, you know? So I think additive manufacturing is going to be similar. The general public doesn't typically get excited about a manufacturing technology. What they care about is, okay, how does this make my individual life better in some way?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are really just in the last 18 months starting to hit some of those things and see a big shift in the market towards applications.
Yeah.
And that's something we're actually really excited about because, you know, my background's engineering. Most of our team here were engineers. And so as much as printing, you know, Star Wars models is fun, you can only do that so many times before you're like, okay, how are we really helping the world? How are we making a difference? And so that's what I'm excited about on the hype cycle, is that I think we're in this building stage where real progress is being made. Mm-hmm. And in the next decade, we're going to see in some of the stuff we're going to talk about soon, I think, about the AI, is this stuff is going to be easier for the average user to grasp. And that opens up a whole suite of applications where it becomes useful to the general public. And they might know that additive manufacturing or 3D printing is in the background. They don't care, right? They just care about, okay, how do I get my thing in the best way possible?
Yeah. Yeah. I was coming on to AI with my next question. Obviously, you know, that you'll appreciate that you're not the first person on the podcast this year to kind of bring the subject up, and I'm sure you won't be last. What's your take on the discourse around AI at the moment, and to the point you just made, where do you see those applications for AI, I guess, in this additive manufacturing industry? What do you see as the real opportunities there?
Yeah, so we're definitely in the hype part of the Gartner cycle with AI, right?
Yeah.
And I imagine we're going to ride that wave for a little while. You look at like venture funding and where venture funding is going, it's all going to AI right now. Most of those companies are going to burn out. But some of them will come through and they'll have real useful breakthroughs. And absolutely some of those things will be applied to additive manufacturing or 3D printing technologies. You know, in terms of kind of the major buckets of where I see AI being useful, is generating models more easily to enable the average user to not have to know and have years of education in a CAD platform, a computer-aided design platform. I also see AI helping in the sort of the printability aspect, and probably talk more about that. But if you think about most of the models that you're going to find on an open online repository like a Thingiverse or a Printables, maybe not most, but a significant portion of them are going to actually be very difficult to print and may not turn out well on your first shot. It might take you 3 or 4 tries before you can get it to work correctly. And part of that's a lack of design for additive manufacturing knowledge or understanding on the behalf of the creator. And part of it is just the inconsistency from printer to printer or from slicer to slicer. And I think that printability aspect of the user journey going from downloading the model, and maybe what I hope to see is, okay, when you, if you take an example, like is Xometry or Proto Labs, have you used those platforms?
I haven't.
So when you upload a CAD model to those platforms in the browser, it's going to tell you, okay, this area is going to be difficult for us to machine. Can you change this? Can you modify this tolerance? And it spits out a report for you. I mean, very quickly, within minutes. And I imagine that that sort of technology is going to come to the online file repositories. So when you upload a file, and hopefully this will be applied to, you know, backwards facing all the models that are on the platform, but saying, hey, this is actually not printable, you know, or if you fix, you know, if you make this overhang 1 millimeter less or change the angle by 5 degrees, okay, now it is printable and your success rate goes from, you know, 20% on first try for the average user to 90% or 100%. And so that printability aspect of checking on the front end to make sure that something is actually useful, printable, I think it's going to be helpful. And then so that like assistance checking, and then also the reliability aspect of, you know, spaghetti detection, for example, has been around for a long time, right? That's a machine learning algorithm that's been, you know, widely available for a while. But there's a bunch of companies and universities doing research now on how to kind of crank that up to 11, right? How do we get to the next generation of what spaghetti detection has created? And those systems are, that next generation of systems is going to be able to not just say, hey, user, you know, your print has failed, and send you an alert to your phone, which is cool, but also be able to have some feedback, right? Some closed loop feedback into the system and say, okay, we see that there's buildup of material on the nozzle. All right, we're going to pause and we're going to go wipe the nozzle right off to the side. Most machines have that ability, but there's no feedback loop to say, maybe you should wipe the nozzle right now. So that type of capability is going to improve reliability of the print. So it's really a threefold thing, right? It's the generating the model, making it printable, and then the reliability on the actual machine to make sure the job completes. And I think AI is going to help with all three of those things.
Yeah. On the first of those three things, I was at a conference this week, and it was a defense and aerospace conference over here in the UK. And there was a workshop, and the topic of autonomy came up. So it wasn't necessarily about AI, but it was about these kind of, you know, these kind of technologies that can give autonomy to the process to kind of, you know, take certain jobs out of the hands of the operator. So if we take modeling and design as something there, you know, you mentioned that the operator would not necessarily have to have the deepest level of expertise and knowledge in CAD. A point was made by somebody in that workshop that you may, however, need the operator to be able to challenge the AI and challenge the output of the AI. So that person does actually need to be quite skilled. So how does that all work out? How do we kind of, you know, on the one hand, we say, oh, well, the AI can do it, so the operator doesn't necessarily need to get involved. But the operator does need to be able to see if there was an error or identify an opportunity to I don't know, maybe prompt the AI better. And for someone like me who doesn't have that background, for example, I wouldn't be able to do that, I don't think. So how do we, as we integrate AI into these kind of workflows, how do we get around something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it makes me think of, you know, all the LLM, the models, the large language models typically have some sort of disclaimer on the bottom that says like, the AI may give you inaccurate or offensive results, right? And you can see that on ChatGPT. You can see that on the Authentize's 3D GPT, right? Their additive focused model. And so I think for many years to come, probably decades to come, there's going to be a certain level of guess and check, right? Is this truly useful information? I like how Microsoft has incorporated it into Bing, where they're actually citing sources. Not all the large language models are doing that. So I can see an aspect where a user could, you know, integrate it into this model workflow. Maybe there's a prompt, not a prompt, but an output at the bottom that says, you know, these design decisions were made based on XYZ. And maybe there's like a, you know, a hamburger menu or something that you can click on. And if you want to get into the deeper details, you can. I think for structures that are, you know, functional parts where you need to carry a load, or it's a life-saving application, or, you know, it's a mechanical structure, absolutely, you will still need a user with a lot of background knowledge and understanding. I think about, you know, when I got my engineering degree, I learned a lot of math that I have never used in my career. But the math taught me principles that are then applied in the CAD software, or in the finite element analysis software, or in the thermal transfer software. And if I didn't have the background knowledge to of how the model is supposed to work based on the mathematics, then I would not be able to detect an error in those platforms, right? The CAD or the FEA or the thermal analysis. And I think the same is going to be true with AI-enabled CAD, but the average user of, you know, OpenSCAD or what's Google's platform called? SketchUp, right? They aren't building models that are used for functional mechanical applications or life-saving applications. And so they probably don't need to know all that background. If you're trying to generate a toy for your kid, or, you know, you just take the old school route that existed before topography optimization and you know, finite element analysis, and you just make it really big, you know, it's like a structure could be optimized by 80%, but you just make it thicker. I think that's fine for probably the average user. It's going to be the bulk of that, let's call it the user base. Yeah. Is not going to be making functional components. So yeah, hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, I guess so, because obviously the depending on the application, there will be different requirements on, you know, how safety critical, for example, a part is, or, you know, and in that context, in an aerospace and defense conference, I guess when that conversation was happening, I was thinking, well, if a part is made with AI or designed with AI, it breaks down, who do you hold to
account?
Yeah. Is it the AI? Is it the person who prompted the AI? Is it the company that developed the AI? Who has responsibility in that context? And obviously, you know, in that industry as well, there's the company, and then there's a tier one supplier, maybe a tier two supplier, mm-hmm. there's a whole supply chain behind it. So obviously in a setting like that, that is a much more complex process. And therefore I guess maybe it takes longer to integrate this kind of technology into that? Is that what you would expect?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would expect that the sort of average users, the average non-technical users' experience with 3D modeling and the whole 3D printing workflow is going to become much more AI enabled and simpler, much faster than in, you know, medical or defense or aerospace, because it's not a life-saving application, right? Or, you know, a mission critical application. But in those applications, I think you are going to see a cross check. Like maybe for example, generating drawings for parts is super annoying, you know, like the modeling is typically fun. Most engineers that do design work enjoy the 3D modeling process, but generating the drawings on the back end and doing the tolerancing and stuff, that's like, at least for me, that's the tedious work, you know? Yeah. And so, but you still need somebody to check your drawings. And in, you know, if you're familiar with like the, at least in the US, the professional engineering title, like you have to pass an exam and you're certified. And when you sign off on a drawing, right, there's a place for the creator of the drawing, and then there's the checker of the drawing, right? The person that signed off on it. And that person typically needs to be a professionally licensed engineer in a mission critical application mm-hmm. or a life-saving application. And so that person, the checker, is ultimately liable for the, you know, in a court of law, or if somebody gets hurt or dies, God forbid, that person that checked off on the drawing is the one that's liable for what occurred.
Yeah. Makes sense. Is AI something that Slice Engineering is working with actively today, or is it something that you're aware that your users are working with? Does that change? Does the kind of development of AI over the last few years, and obviously it's all that everyone's talking about at the moment, does that change the way that you guys do your work and the way you develop your products? Is that something that you're thinking about as you're developing products?
Yeah, absolutely. So AI, we use almost every single day
right,
at
okay.
Slice. And in fact, I'd wager to say it's multiple times every day. Not so much on the design front right now. That's still mostly driven by, you know, the engineering team here. But on the marketing and sales side, on the web design side, on the programming side, all of those are enabled by, you know, AI applications. Graphic design, anything, all the sort of other things that you need to run the company besides the let's call it hardcore engineering, is very much AI enabled. And even, you know, you could put like firmware modifications or coding in that hard engineering discipline category, and that's largely enabled by AI at our firm now. We have people that can program, and we are in contact with a lot of people that can program, but it is much faster to, even if the code isn't the most optimized, to, because typically when we're running new code, it's to test something or to check something. It's not going into a production build. And so the AI can generate the code in seconds. You know, it would have taken much more time for the programmer to write it. And then we can guess check. And if it serves the purpose, we can deploy it in R&D. It doesn't have to be the most optimal solution that a programmer with 25 years of experience could write.
Yeah.
So in that sense, we are using AI constantly in our day-to-day work. On the product development side, it's something we are staying extremely attuned to. Whenever a new tool comes out, we typically check it out, you know, try and use it. And as soon as we feel like it has reached the point of enabling faster work, you know, faster work at an acceptable level of quality, that's when it will implement it into our design processes. We've achieved that in, you know, generating marketing copy and, you know, writing sales emails and helping with graphic design. It's not yet there for CAD modeling or slicing and things like that.
Yeah. One thing I did want to ask before we finish today was about the defense industry. Obviously, having come off the back of that conference earlier this week, there was a lot of talk around, I guess, A, the investment of that industry into 3D printing, B, extrusion 3D printing, and perhaps more specifically than that was actually the smaller format extrusion machine. So I was just wondering if you could provide just a bit of insight into your interactions with players in this market and the trends that you're seeing there.
Yeah. So there's definitely been a pretty massive disruption. You know, we've seen from, I guess we can just say it, Bamboo Lab, right, has disrupted the market pretty significantly in the desktop space. And, you know, whether you agree with some of the ways they do things or not, it's impossible not to admit that they have created a more seamless user experience for the average user. And it's hard to argue with that. So there's obviously certain concerns on the defense side. Around using those machines, right? And so I'm hopeful that there will be more secure alternatives available in the near future. And I'm aware of multiple companies that are working on that. Under NDA with most of them, so I can't say who's working on what. But I'm well aware of the efforts that are being made to create those type of solutions. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see what comes of that as the sort of approach that Bamboo Labs has taken to enabling a more streamlined user experience is proliferated across the whole industry, across the whole desktop space.
And then my final question today, Dan, and thank you so much for taking the time today. What can we expect to see from Slice Engineering, in I guess the near to medium term? What have you got coming out? What are you currently working on that we can expect to see in the near future?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of next generation hot ends or print heads coming out in the near future. We're very excited about them. And so that's probably the first thing to see. Something that we released midway through last year at Rapid TCT was a very high flow printhead that's being used a lot in non-planar or robotic applications, where you can do different types of parts using these non-planar systems. And it's called Mosquito Prime. So that's something that we're continuing to build out and in, again, that non-planar space and also in prosthetics. So that's an exciting thing that we're going to continue to push. And that's a lot of that is based on speed, you know, how quickly or more accurately volumetric flow rate, how quickly can you melt the plastic and push it through a nozzle in a way that you still retain mechanical properties. So that's a big focus of ours.